time for a Sales Manager Spotlight, brought to you by Death Wish Coffee, the world's strongest coffee. And we're going to be talking to some of the world's strongest and smartest sales managers.
What they like, what they fear, how they hire. Doesn't matter if you're a manager, doesn't matter if you're a salesperson, it doesn't even matter if you're just a person. You're going to learn something from these top leaders from around the country.
And with that, it's time to get this week's Sales Manager Spotlight. Let's go to the boss's office. I promise, this time, it won't be scary.
On the line today is David White. He is the District Sales Manager for Proliant HCM, located in Tampa, Florida. Proliant is the trusted payroll and workforce solutions provider for companies nationwide. You can find out more about David's company at www.proliant.com.
Hi, David. How are you? Do you go by David or Dave?
You can call me Dave. Whatever. Dave's fine.
Okay, cool. How many guys are on your team?
How many guys are on my team? We have about 12 of us.
And tell me what it is that they do and how you lead them.
Well, some of them are a little bit more seasoned. I'm 50 years old. I've been in sales for 25 years. I've been on the role of being a manager, but I've also been on the role of the sales side. So here I kind of work with some of the newer people, people maybe that are newer to the industry. I work for an HCM, which is human capital management company. So a lot of us, to have to do this, you have to be very seasoned. We've got a new rep here in Tampa, even though he came from another organization. I work with him on the way we do things. We do things differently than other people do. The company, you have to adjust. I just came from a management position where I had 12 people under me with a company called PrimePay. I was there 4 years. And there I definitely led more because I had 12 people that sold payroll under me, and I was kind of the benefits insurance arm of all our sales. They needed me. We could not drive the sales home unless I was there. Mm-hmm. Here we're a little bit more seasoned, so you're working with people who have been down the road before, but they've got to learn the way that our company does things.
And you got a lot of competitors, don't you?
We do. ADT obviously is the big one. Paychex is a big competitor. Paycom is a big competitor. We're kind of considered a B level, payroll company, but there's good and bad in that.
So for the new sales guy getting into sales, what do you recommend to them? What's the one thing they have to do or not do?
Somebody getting into sales, what I kind of always say to them, you got to have great attitude. You have to have energy to be in sales. I think if you're a personality, more relaxed, I think it's tough to succeed in sales because people buy from the person. I think they have to be coachable, particularly if they don't come from a real big sales background. They've got to be coachable. And then they've got to learn to be independent. I have an office, but I predominantly work here out of my home, so I'm independent. It's critical to be independent. You have to get up every day. You can't be washing your clothes. You can't be running errands. You got to get up, set up your schedule, and do your job.
Why is it that salespeople think, oh, well, I could just do these five other things and I'm still selling, but they're really not?
No, I think you're seeing that in the industry. A lot of people don't want, steel and cement anymore, paying all those rent costs and paying for buildings anymore. They're having a lot more people work out of home. I've actually worked out of my home, and I've always had in many situations an office. But I pretty much have worked out of my home for 15 years, so I'm very used to it. And you're going to get judged by your numbers. So if you're sitting there running to the cleaners or picking your kids up at school and doing this and that, you're not going to hit your numbers. So that's what it comes down to. So companies realize that. They'll look at it at the end of the year, and you're only as good as your last year. You'll either have a job or you won't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes
down to. Let me go over your criteria. Attitude, hard work, be coachable. Be independent, and I added one, be honorable about the use of your time.
Correct.
I couldn't
agree with you more. You have to be honorable with your time, especially I've always been one that managers have always said to me, I don't really have to worry where you're at. I don't have to worry what you're doing because they can see, sales coming. So some people have that. Some people like somebody over their shoulder and structure. If you're going to work from home, and you're going to manage a team, you have to keep that structure and be organized.
So I just want to ask you a sales question. When you're in a meeting with somebody and they're obviously deciding on someone who can take over their payroll, their benefits, and their insurance, and they say, well, we're looking at you and ADP, how would you differentiate yourself?
To me, that's really easy, I'll be honest. Yeah, I kind of joke with them. ADP is such a great company. I mean, I respect, you've got to respect your competitors.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great company. Our niche market's very different. What I say to people is our niche is kind of two lives of 500, where ADP's kind of niche market is that couple thousand.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to work with us and you want to have, you know, sometimes two and they're smaller groups, you're calling in an 800 number and you're getting someone maybe that doesn't know your account. But with us, you have, doesn't matter whether you're 10 employees or you're 500, you're assigning an account manager that takes care of all your solutions that we sell here. So you're able to have a rep,
a person
you can call,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not an 800 number. That's a big differentiator.
Talk to us about the best sales rep you've ever managed and what made them stand out.
I've had two or three in my life that I can look back on, but it's funny. I'll go back to when I started. I started with Marriott Corporation as a manager. I had 22 reps that were under me. I was an assistant director of banquets and catering. I actually had a gentleman, his name was Ted Nell. And this guy, I could call this guy at 3 o'clock in the morning to help me with something we were in trouble with. He would get out of bed and drive over and say, it needs to be done. Never a complaint, never, oh my God, I'm tired, I'm exhausted. If we had to run over and pay the guy overtime, 4 hours overtime, the guy would stay 4 hours overtime. Attitude was outstanding. Extremely polite with customers. I would put him up there with one of the best people I ever managed.
And do you have a philosophy, a leadership philosophy yourself that you impart to your guys?
I'll give you a funny one. My father was senior vice president of sales for Libby's Foods, for the Libby's on the table. My dad, from the time I was young, said, whether it was school or it was business, he said to me, know who the boss is. I'm going to give you that one learning lesson in life. The boss will always win battles. Know who the boss is, because someday you're going to be one. And I always kind of live by that mantra. And I would say to guys, you know, guys or ladies who work for me, you always have people who push back on you or say things. And I said, I'm going to take it back to what my dad used to say. I'm the boss. You may not agree with it, but there's a reason I'm in this position. And learn it, because someday you may be the boss. And you're going to expect what you say to others to be adhered to. So I've kind of always lived by that mantra. Hmm.
Could you have a discussion with my 8-year-old daughter?
I have a 14-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So I was raised very disciplined. My dad was a, you know, reservist in the Army. And I think he always, being his senior VP that he got to within such a major organization, he learned toughness. So I'm pretty strict with my own kids. So you could probably trust me with her.
Well,
wait a minute. Does she have a cell phone and a tablet?
I'm sure you do a good job raising your daughter.
Yeah.
You're probably more disciplined than me, I would expect. Jeff.
Nah, I'll tell you. We have one rule in the house, and the rule is that there's not many rules.
She thinks she's in
charge.
Oh, really?
Oh, she totally thinks she's in charge, yeah. We have rules, but they're so subtle that she actually follows them.
So speaking of bosses, what about the best boss you've ever had? What did you take away from them?
You know what? It's funny. I thought about this the other day, and I don't remember if somebody asked me a question, but I'm still friends with almost all my bosses today, which is amazing.
Wow. That's cool. That is
really cool.
That's way cool.
Yeah.
We're almost, and the reason being is they would tell me to do things, and they would, I'm pretty an intense sales guy, and they would tell me something. And I would say, they'd say, I can see it in your face. You don't agree with me. I'm like, no, I don't agree with you, but I'm going to do it because you're the boss. And it's funny. I actually worked better for women than I did for men, which is surprising. Men could kind of, I think having a woman boss and a man boss are different because men can tell each other what to do with themselves.
Right.
But women, I think you have to be more respectful. It's a different kind of relationship. But some of the really good bosses I had were women. And I think it's because women appreciate the family a little more. Men are go until you die. Women are, hey, you've got a kid at home. Or somebody has to go to the hospital. And there's more of that, hey, family's number one, not work. So I think I've had more respect probably working for women. And also, you know, you watch what you say, you treat a woman with respect. And for that reason, I think some of the women bosses I've always had have always respected in the way that I've been under them.
Separate bathrooms. Separate bathrooms. That tells you everything.
That deserves the hashtag girl boss. I love that.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that because I have a woman speaking to me, but that is true. I've told people I would much rather work for a woman boss than I would a man boss. I have over the years.
It seems to be a trend. People confess this on our show. They like women salespeople better and women bosses better.
Yeah, I do.
I feel very fortunate to be a woman. I'll tell you that.
I don't think there's a glass ceiling. I think that the women are standing on top of the glass ceiling, stepping on people's hands to try to get up there.
Well,
I love
that. Won't get into that.
Yeah.
I mean, the woman boss that I had was probably my last boss. She helped me when I needed to close the sale. As long as I wasn't always asking for sales, isn't all about price, it's about selling yourself. And, you know, she was very respectful. If there were times I had to get aggressive to get a deal. Her follow-up was excellent. You know, if I called her, I would at least hear from her. If she was busy, I heard from her at the end of the day, or I got an email or something worse than having a boss who doesn't get back to you.
Yep.
I mean, when you're a salesperson or a director of sales and you have a boss over, you have something that needs to get done, and calling you 3 days later isn't getting the job done. I think women are really, really good about organization getting back. So I'd say probably my last boss.
It's interesting. You expect speed of response from your people, and it sounds like you give it as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my – listen, every manager's got its good traits, its bad traits. I mean, my biggest thing is you must follow up. If you're going to work for me, I always tell people, the one time I'll do it as a learning lesson where I hear a customer calls me and says, guess what, Tom didn't get in touch with me. Second time, you're going to get suspended. You're going to get a write-up. Third time, I don't need you. There's too many people that really.
Exactly. You're tough, man. I love it.
Third time, you don't need the person because they're obviously not going to listen. And I've got enough. There's enough people out there that need jobs, and you need people that respond back. I don't need to spend my time getting called if people aren't following up.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most interesting things that you said is that you're friends with all of your bosses. If you ever watch a University of Texas game when Mac Brown was coaching, you'd always see 50 people on the sideline, people that went to visit him for the game, whether they played it at one of the other schools that he coached at or that they're alumni from the present school. He elicited and won friendships from people who love to just email him and say, hey, Mac, this is what I'm doing now. Guess what? I did this. When you have that quality of maintaining friendships and wanting to talk to those people, I think that's an amazing characteristic of a boss.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you 100%. And there's, you know, what percentage are really good bosses out there if you think about it? I've been blessed to have some, but I've also had some that really I wouldn't bring up. But most of the time, most of the serious bosses I've had in big positions I've had, we're still friends today. I'm fishing with one in a couple of weeks. He's retired since and lives up in St. Augustine, and we're going to go fishing together. We're just going to talk about old business. You know, he's going to be a mentor to me because he's 20 years older, probably 15 years older than me. So, you know, learn a little bit about his success.
Of course, yeah, of course.
You know, we're still friends today.
So if I go fishing with you, would you take them off the hook, please? Because I don't want to touch them when they're squirming.
I've caught so many fish, I can't even tell you how many I caught in my life.
Okay,
thousands. I'll take it off for you. I'll even put your bait on for you.
Thank you.
Wow. That's a friend right there. That's a friend.
Exactly.
I typically have used plastic worms because I fish in fresh water rather than in the ocean. It's a little too rocky for me.
I fished bass tournaments with Bassmasters mm-hmm. for 3 years back in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
It's funny. I've caught so many fish in my life, and I don't use live bait. To me, that's cheating. I'm a big crankbait person or somebody like that. But I think if you're going to catch, I think you catch bigger fish with the plastics anyway.
My father-in-law, who unfortunately passed away, my ex-father-in-law, he would take a rowboat out. And we lived in Lake County, Florida, at 4:30 in the morning. And he would sit in the front of the boat with a cane pole in one hand and a plastic worm on it and a paddle in the other hand, and he would work the shoreline with the paddle and pull fish out of the water that people would frame. And that's we feed 25 people every Sunday, no matter what, with fresh bass.
That's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been a big, going from Pennsylvania, where you have the cold spell, to Florida. I've caught 10 pounders down here.
Yeah.
8 pounders. I've never caught so many big bass in my life. You can't catch bass down here, you can't fish.
Exactly. But I'd have none by 5:30 in the morning, and he would turn back and go, "How's the corporation doing?"
Wow. Wow, that wouldn't happen with me. I would catch fish. If they're in there, I'm going to catch them.
Cool. Yeah, totally cool.
Oh, man.
But this guy knew where the wind was blowing. I mean, he knew where the fish were. And he would tell us what, you know, there's like 5 lakes around, and we'd always go to the right place and the right weeds and the right time and just yank him out of there. It was pretty
That's
fun.
Cool.
There's nothing like knowing the body of water.
Yep.
You can go all around that lake, and there's 3 spots that they're in, and they seem to always be there. It's weird.
Totally weird. Yeah. Well, it's like they know you're going to be there. They go, "Hey, come on, let's get caught by Dave today."
Exactly. It's lunchtime. He's coming by. But the only thing is they do get spooked. So I'm one. Once I catch them, I won't go back for 3 or 4 weeks because fish aren't dumb. They remember when they got hooked. So if you want to repeatedly catch them, you can't go there every time.
That's
or they're going to get tired of getting caught.
That's correct.
Well, that's interesting. Wow, this is a lot of education on fish that I was unaware of.
My father-in-law's slogan was, 5% of the fishermen catch 95% of the fish.
Probably true. Probably true. When people say, "Oh, all you do is throw out there and get lucky," yeah, that happens sometimes. But you got to know what to put on. I never go out without knowing what the tide is. Because I'm here in Florida now, everything is, you know, low and high tide. But you got to get it when things are moving. If you get that slack tide where it's in between, doesn't matter what you throw, you're not going to catch anything.
Well, I'll tell you how good I'll tell you how good of a fisherman my father-in-law was. The Orlando Sentinel would call him to find out where the best fishing places were in Lake County.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. And he'd wake me up in the morning. He'd wake me up in the morning by scratching on my screen outside of our window.
It's an addiction.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Totally. Yeah, he was totally addicted.
So, Dave, I want to get back to our interview for a second and find out your philosophy and value around training and education.
Okay. First place, if they don't know the product, they can't sell it. So, you know, some of these, I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I kind of took a job in between, wanted to get back into management again, and I had worked for a life insurance company and kind of ran the whole offsite, 10 people that were under me. And they didn't pay a lot there, so you kind of got people that were farmers. You got people that really didn't have a background in sales, but that's who they could get for who they were paying. So I told them, I said, "You're going to sit here for 2 weeks, and you're going to learn this product in and out, because you cannot go out and fake sell. People can read you a million miles away. You got to know the business. You got to understand the value of it. And you have to tell people, I'm not here for what's in it for me and my commissions. It's what's in it for you." When you sell, you have to sell something to somebody that's in it for them, not for you. Because if you have that attitude of, "I'm just going to go get commissions and move on," you're known as the snake oil salesman. And no one wants to be known as that. So training is, I think, critical. They have to know the product. Even if you're experienced in the business, just like I was, where I came from, you know, a human capital management company, and I've now gone to a new one within the last year. The way they do business and the way that my own company did business are very different. You're using different carriers, different things. So it was important that I also learn our way of doing business here. So you must train. You must know the product in and out, because you're supposed to be the expert when you're out there.
I think product knowledge is a given. What about soft skills?
You talk about soft skills as far as communication with people.
Communication, sales, attitude. You know, personal development and growth kind of skills.
Yeah, I think what you have to do is when you hire people, you're not hiring them just to get you by for the year. You have to give them a feeling that they're going to have a long career with you and that they're going to be able to raise their family. We've all got kids going to school or playing in sports, and you have to show them that they have a future. So it's important that they get excited about what they're selling. You have to have energy. I tell them, if you're not excited about what you're selling, I don't know why you're here. Don't take a job in sales just to make money. Take a job because you believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Every company I worked for, I had to really like what I was selling. And I tell them that if life insurance at that time, if it's not your passion to sell that, then you can't be here, because the people are going to buy from you and your passion for why it's better for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they buy the salesperson first and then the product.
They do. They do. So you have to have a passion. You can't go in there and just go through the motions. So eye contact is critical. Sitting looking in your lap when you're supposed to be selling to someone isn't a salesperson. Look them in the eyes, let them gain that trust, and you can't just be like that salesperson just wants to make a commission. You won't be successful. You'll be one of those people that are there for a year and gone.
So when you get a new guy, how do you ramp them up?
I sit down from the first day and I, him or her, and I just kind of sit down and say, what's your background? Be honest with me. What do you know and you don't know? When I came here to this company, I was very, very well trained from where I came from. So my boss kind of did that with me. What do you know? And then what do you not know? And I sat down and said, look, here's four things I'm really successful at, but I'm a little bit weaker in these areas. And he said, when you go up for training, we need to let the trainer know that. In these three areas, you must be completely know that information in and out before you hit the field.
Are your guys on their own every day? Do you give them a 10-minute kick in the ass in the morning?
No, I think, listen, I'm 50 years old. I've been doing this for 25 years. Most of the people I work with have as well. You wouldn't be in the position, or you wouldn't have gotten the job if you needed a kick in the pants. So most people know what it is to get up and do their job. And that's what's nice, because we can, even though we all came from different, companies, they've been around the block. So it's, you just can tell after a couple months who really gets it and who's going to be a driver for you and who's not going to be successful.
If you're a sales leader and you just heard this segment and you're thinking, man, I really should get that Gittimer Learning Academy, stop. You need to get the Learning Academy for your entire team so they can get better. And you can track, measure, and monitor everybody on your team after they've taken the assessment and learn about how good they are and or where they need help. And you as their leader can now actually coach them to victory.
If you're a strong, smart, successful sales manager and you want to be featured in our Sales Manager Spotlight series on Sell or Die, all you need to do is email sellordie@gittimer.com. If you know someone or you have a favorite sales manager who's amazing and should be featured, nominate them at sellordie@gittimer.com. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.